I'm Gab. He's Jules. Pretty nasty morning, great morning in West London, but that's okay because we had a weekend of great football. We're going to get into all of that. We're going to get into Le Classique, Paris Saint-Germain against Marseille. Nice shirt, by the way. No, I won't mention the Eagles being 6-0 against the hated Dallas Cowboys.
And
0. Amazing, man. Liverpool and City, what a game. I mean, ratio of goals to excitement, I think that's an outlier on that one. But obviously, there's one place to start because it is the biggest game in the universe, as they incessantly tell us. I love those numbers about like 700 million viewers, 350 countries, and three planets watching. Okay, whatever. But it is big. Real Madrid and Barcelona. Real Madrid win. We've got Alex Kirkland with us. Alex, I'm just going to start with you. I know that it's our tendency in the media to be negative, but I also want to be positive here. And start with that with Real Madrid, because it's 14 games played this season, 12 wins, 2 draws. One of them was that Shakhtar Donetsk game in midweek where they left half the team out. The other one was the one where Benzema decided he was going to miss penalties against Osasuna again. This is pretty remarkable for a team that did not sign Kylian Mbappe. And I thought their game plan worked perfectly against Barcelona.
I thought they were very, very impressive against Barcelona. It really felt to me like they kept Barca at arm's length in this game. And it felt like Madrid knew exactly what they were doing. They were solid in defence and they knew when to take their chances. When the opportunities came, boom, Benzema gets the first goal. Another chance, boom, Valverde gets the second. And to be honest, at 2-0 in the first half, it felt like pretty much game over to me. Yes, Barca rallied in the second half. Yes, they pulled a goal back right at the end. But I never felt like Madrid's lead was in danger. And yet, I agree, they've basically carried on this season. It just seems like a continuation of last season when they won the double. They've carried on doing pretty much the same thing they were doing last year. And I just thought they looked like a more mature team, a more confident team, a team that knew what they were doing. And Barca looked like they're still really a work in progress.
We'll get to Barca in a minute. But first, Jules, I want to just get you quickly. At 2-0, you said the game felt like it was over. I agree with Alex. I felt the same way. If we want to find fault with Madrid, should we find fault by suggesting that they let Barca back into the game a little bit?
Yeah, maybe. We've always said that, don't we, that they control very well the moment when they're strong, the strong moments for them, and then the weaker moments, they usually ride that wave quite well. But this time it felt that they just invited the pressure a little bit too much, because there's maybe a penalty on Lewandowski that could have been given from Carvajal that could be debatable. And then there's obviously the goal that they scored late. And then it's a kind of a tense last few minutes in the game where they should have been.
Well, you mentioned that we're going to talk about it more, about some of the officiating decisions. Laporta not happy. We'll get into that later. But if I'm Xavi, can I tell myself, look, we weren't that bad. If Lewandowski takes his chance early on, it's a different story. If we don't give up the early goal, we always knew it was going to be tough. If I'm Xavi and I tell myself that, am I deluding myself? Because he didn't say that. He actually said the opposite. He said we need to do a lot better.
I mean, the Lewandowski chance was the one. I think it was a slightly more difficult than maybe it looked initially. He was stretching. He was there at the far post. Still, though, it's Lewandowski. You'd expect him to score. And if he had, maybe things would have been different. But no, I think to focus too much on that, I think would be a little bit misleading. I think Madrid were just vastly superior right the way through. Yes, maybe they could have gone on and pushed and gone for more goals, but that's not really this Real Madrid team's style. It's not really what Ancelotti's looking for. I think he's a little bit more conservative with this Real Madrid team. And I think they back themselves to defend. I think a 2-0 lead is absolutely fine. They believe that they can hold on to that right the way through. And they pretty much did until the very end when Ferran scored. So I just don't think this is really a Real Madrid team that's going to push on at 2-0 up and go for more and more goals. It's not their style.
Right, let's turn it back to Barca, though, because this is, remember, we said we're going to just praise Real Madrid and then we're going to go put the boot into Barca here, which is what I wanted you to do, and said you keep talking about Real Madrid. So I'm going to get Jules. I'm going to bring in the goon. We're going to spend some time talking about all the mistakes he made, but what were the biggest ones that you saw wrong with Barcelona?
I mean, I think he got his starting 11 wrong. It's to start with, as simple as that. I cannot comprehend how you can think that Sergio Roberto can defend on Vinicius Jr. with no help whatsoever, because he didn't get much help.
So what do you do? Move Koundé to right back and play De Jong as a centre back?
I would even play Balde at right back, even if he's left-footed. Because in possession, your full-backs, you don't use them anymore. It's all about your wingers, which, again, I don't understand either. But at least put someone on Vinicius' side that matches space. And then Sergi Busquets. I mean, come on, Busquets.
Individual errors.
You can't play him anymore in those kind of games. I'm sorry. You can't play him like that. He moves like a turtle. He's like, he doesn't even, what used to make him so good, he can't even do anymore. I'm sorry, but it's the time now.
All right. I'm going to add to that. I need to see Ansu Fati sooner. He can't be the fourth guy off the bench. I want to continue looking at Barcelona and their situation. But before we do that, Jules, we're contractually obligated. Jules, tell me, who scored the opening goal for Real Madrid?
Kareem the Dream!
There you go. That's done. We got that out of the way.
What?
All right. Alex, Jules made the point earlier, comparing where these teams are compared to where they met last year when Barcelona trounced them 4-0. Obviously, it's a different situation. That was the game that Modric played as center forward, theoretical center forward, whatever he's doing. In terms of tactically how the pieces actually fit together, I don't understand why they are so predictable. I know people can pick on the defenders and it's easy to play if the defenders are good, but I'm not feeling these wingers. I don't get that. It's not just, for me, it's not so much a problem that they play via the wingers all the time. It's just that I'm not sure these wingers are quite that good to justify that. And B, they do the same thing over and over again. They're predictable wingers. They don't vary it. They don't do the cutback waiting for the runner from midfield, for example.
I got the feeling yesterday that Lewandowski was isolated and a little bit frustrated at times, actually, with Dembélé and Rafinha either side of him. I thought Rafinha was quiet. Dembélé has always been a kind of a moments player, an inconsistent player, can do brilliant things or can get things really wrong. And I just thought, I just thought he was really disappointing. And like I say, Lewandowski was up there on his own. I feel like to really get the best out of him, he needs players closer to him. And you mentioned Ansu Fati, who came on and was brilliant for the Barca goal. Maybe he's a player who's going to associate a bit more with Lewandowski than someone like Dembélé, for example. It was a bit kind of predictable. It was a bit slow. It felt like Barca had lots of the ball but didn't do very much with it. And like I say, Madrid were just willing to sit back and wait for their chance.
He always brings it back to Madrid, doesn't
he? No, but he's right. But
explain Ansu Fati to me. Explain.
There's a fitness issue, Gab. It can't be anything else. He has some
medical condition.
He can't play more than 20-25 minutes, maybe right now for a game in a game with that kind of intensity. Otherwise,
I'm going to put this out there, right? If you are a doctor of any kind, please reach out to me on social media and tell me what this condition is called—the one which stops you from playing more than 20.
No, because he's not ready. Maybe they're cautious because of all the injury record that he's had in the last 2 years. I don't know.
Is it build up his muscle mass? What does he have to do?
But maybe our training is not very good either. I don't know. But there must be a reason.
Well, let's ask Alex since he's there. Alex, what do they say?
There must be something there because Xavi isn't picking him, and Luis Enrique isn't picking him for Spain either. So
when you ask these people the question, Xavi, ¿por qué? Ese es bueno, el otro es malo. When you explain it to him or say it in Catalan,
what does he say? Kind of access to Xavi. But
no, not you, but people give press conferences. There must be people asking, why does the most technically gifted non-Polish player on this Barcelona team, why is he still on the bench when he's been back in training for months and months?
You're right. He's been back in training for a long time, but I think he still doesn't have the sharpness that you need
You're telling me what you think, and I appreciate that. But why is it? Is Xavi? Has nobody in the entire Spanish media has thought to ask Xavi or Luis Enrique this question?
I haven't heard an answer. But
I mean, Luis Enrique was asked and said directly, he's not at his level. He's not at the level that he needs to be at.
At the physical level or at the performance level?
No, performance level.
All right, but then picks Eric Garcia,
you bring him on wide, to play wide in a game like this. Maybe Xavi's mindset is to have two pure wingers to play wide. So Dembélé, Rafinha, whoever you want as a winger, And Fati doesn't really fit that profile because he's not a typical winger like Dembele or Rafinha,
but
right?
But he's better than them.
I know, but then we go back
at least
to,
you have more variety.
But we go back to the style of play and the tactics from Xavi, who basically, Xavi as a player has two huge influences, right? The first one is the Dutch influence with when Van Gaal was the manager there, right? With two proper winger. And the other one is Pep, right? Right now, I'm flabbergasted to see that he kind of prefer the very Dutch approach of like, let's play with two wingers. Everything literally goes through them. Everything. To the point that you hardly use your fullbacks instead of trying to just build up a bit more your play.
It is weird. You're right. You're 100% right, Jules. This is the value add, Jules, you bring because you've got this historical perspective.
It's just, I don't get it.
This is a throwback to another era of playing.
Yeah.
What's more, what I think makes it worse with these wingers is they do the same thing. They don't, you know, there's different ways. We saw a little bit when we praised Dembele in the Champions League, when the ball's out to Rafinha's side, he comes into the box and he kind of, you know, acts as like a second striker. Okay, that's one variant. But when he's not doing that, they don't look for cutbacks for runners from midfield. They have Kessié, who was really good at actually that, making those runs into the box and finishing. Okay, you don't want him to do it? Gavi, I'm sure, can do it. Pedri, we've seen him do it. But it just doesn't happen. And there's also no variance, and I think one of you guys touched on this before, I think when we were off air, with Lewandowski, I get it. He's phenomenal. How about once in a while, you have him hold the ball up and you ask him to play back to goal a little bit?
I know.
Right? And I'm sure, it's not like Lewandowski doesn't do it because he can't do it, doesn't want to do it. He's not asked to do it.
I know. Before Alex answers, for me, the best Barca we've seen this season is that first half in Munich against Bayern. And this is a half where they didn't play as much on wingers. When Pedri was so good, remember, Alex, that game where they could easily have been 3-0 up at halftime? Because finally, centrally, because I think Bayern maybe were waiting for them wide, centrally, that's when they combine well. So they can even do it. But it seems like the instructions from Xavi is like, give the ball to Rafinha and Dembele, and then they're going to do something. Like we mentioned for the Inter Milan game, the first leg at the San Siro, where they had like 1,000 crosses for no end product.
Yeah, no, I'm... Alex, well, what's your take on this? Is he getting any stick on this?
I think not playing Gavi was a weird one, and that's a decision that's been picked up on here. I understand the desire to bring in Frenkie de Jong. Maybe he's a player who can carry the ball forward, but I think in a game like this, you want Gavi. You want Gavi for the kind of the competitive edge that he brings, the way that he's got snapping into tackles, and I felt like Gavi's energy, I thought was really, really lacking.
I want to ask about the officiating if we have anything to say here, because, you know, there were reports that Laporta before the game had lunch with Florentino Perez. Obviously, they came out singing from the Super League song sheet, which is fine. It's what you expect. But then afterwards, there were reports that he tried to go see the referee. It's funny because, you know, he's talking Super League on the one hand. On the other hand, he's copying your buddy Nasser Al-Khelaifi, right? Let me go and shout at the referee after the game because that's going to change the result. What do we know about that, Alex?
I mean, this feels to me like a bit of an attempt at deflection, to be honest. I think it's helpful for Laporta to be seen as, look, I'm standing up for the club. I'm storming into the referee's room to remonstrate over the decisions. And I think it's useful to distract a bit from what happened on the pitch, which was that Madrid were the better team. So I think it's useful for Laporta and maybe it's useful for Barca. But to be honest, looking at the decisions and the game overall, I didn't see an awful lot wrong, to be honest. I know that Barca had the penalty shout.
Yeah.
Is that's the main thing, right? Eric Garcia and Rodrigo.
I'm not sure what else.
Lewandowski.
The fact that that wasn't looked at and the fact that the Rodrigo one was given. But I mean, I don't know. I don't think they've got too much to go.
Are they clear on the fact that I have to put my VAR hat thing is like when people say it wasn't looked at. No, everything gets looked at. It just didn't call for an on-field review on the pitch. I don't know if there's reached that level of sophistication there. I want to, on the Rodrigo point, and I've been trying to be kind to Barcelona's defender and I've just said, all right, said my views on Eric Garcia. I'm not going to bring him up again. But now I kind of have to because that penalty, whether you believe it was a penalty or not, and obviously the referee didn't call it in real time and then the AR did. I'm assuming we all think it was a penalty?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even if he had won the ball, That's not how you defend.
No.
I don't understand, where did this person learn to defend as a center back?
But the worst is, and I almost tweeted it and I thought, okay, people are going to say that I'm too mean with him. On the second goal, on the Valverde goal, the ball is on the right-hand side for I think maybe Carvajal. And he plays the ball a bit nowhere. And Garcia sort of flicks it when he doesn't need to, because Koundé is where you are and I'm Garcia. And the ball comes from here. And instead of just leaving the ball to Koundé, then right. he kind of tried to go with his head. He flicks, he touches it, goes right. over Koundé's head. Then Madrid get the ball back when they should not have not been nowhere okay. near the ball.
Can we give him the benefit of the doubt that maybe Jules Koundé didn't call for the ball?
No. But after that, there's still a few passage of play, so it's not just that mistake that led straight to the goal, but still. But come on, Eric Garcia, I mean.
Is he as much of a mystery to people in Spain as he is to me?
Yeah, I think the perception is that he's not a very good defender. That he's a very good footballer, great playing out from the back, not a very good defender. But still, keeps getting picked for Barca, keeps getting picked for Spain as well, because they mm-hmm. prioritise, I guess, that ability with the ball over being able to do fairly right. basic defending.
Okay, but this is what I don't get, right? If you get a guy who's Smurf size and not particularly fast,
yeah,
he can play the ball. But this is Spain. Like, every big lump can play. Why don't you put Raul Albiol back there? He can play the ball, and he's tall, and he's strong, and he can read the game and read situations. He doesn't run anymore, also because I think he's 40 years old. But he'll certainly give you more than... Is he 40? We've got to be close.
There's injuries
that.
As well.
Not quite.
I think if Araujo is fit, he plays with Koundé and we never see Eric Garcia in a game of this caliber.
This is, again, this goes back to my problem with the way this team was built, with all the money that was spent, right? You pull all those levers to become super competitive and you have Bellerín as your right back, or Sergi Roberto, who's not a right back, and your first option off the bench, even in your hypothetical world where Koundé and Araujo are fit and play every game, your first option off the bench is either Christensen, and I think his issues are well documented.
Yeah.
Not his fault, perhaps, but whatever.
Yeah.
And Eric Garcia or Pique.
Yeah.
There's no escaping this, right, Alex? Am I wrong here?
I think you look at the recruitment over the summer as a whole, and it feels quite kind of scattershot. Like, I'm not sure. I don't know. Matteo Alemán is the man theoretically in charge of the football aspect at Barca, and he has a very good reputation and knows what he's doing. But, I mean, how many of these signings so far have been unqualified successes? I don't think anyone's going to argue with Lewandowski. But otherwise, pretty much ever since this Barca regime came in, you look at all the players they've brought in. Someone like Ferran Torres is another example. They've spent a lot of money, and I think the jury is out on how much of that money has been wisely spent. And for a club that really needs to spend wisely because they don't have the money, that's not ideal.
All right, let's move it to Real Madrid, back to Real Madrid, because, you know, it's easier to speak negatively about people, but I think we need to, you know, we mentioned the midfield before. Mm. Vinicius was great. I thought Rodrigo also was very effective when he came on, but Valverde ran himself
top
into
three
the
in
ground.
The world, like
right?
Toni Kroos says about Valverde.
Top three what? Uruguayan midfielders?
Three players.
Yeah.
What?
Well, midfielders. I think he probably meant more midfielders than three players.
Yeah,
but
you get easy
he's
there.
Playing unbelievable, that's for sure.
But definitely top three Uruguayan midfielders who play for Madrid. No, sorry. But I want to praise Tchouaméni because...
Oh, yes.
You know, you're playing in this midfield. You're playing against people who, in theory, can zip the ball around left, right, and center. You have to do that thing that we use that Spanish term bascular before, which doesn't seem to exist in English, but you said shuffle.
But maybe, yeah.
Because they always play through the wings, you've got a midfield trio which always has to slide across and help, right? Two of those three guys, one of them is 37, the other one is Kroos, who's, you know, never the most athletic guy, and is also in his 30s. So the way those three worked, and the way Tchouaméni especially, who, you know, is going to be the energy guy out of those three, I thought it was exceptional, Jules.
Fantastic for a first Clásico. Again, let's remind everyone that he's just been there a few months, really. A game of this caliber, even if that was at the Bernabeu, which I think helps, you know, to not be too nervous and in a team that is so high on confidence. It's incredible for someone who's only 22 years old. And again, if you remember his first game against Almeria away, when it was very shaky for him and Camavinga, and it kind of came off early. for him to then have almost switched his mind to become this incredible player in such a key part of that team, I think is a big credit for him. He will start the World Cup now for France because N'Golo Kanté is out. So he's going to have an even bigger end of the year than the last few months. But so much maturity, so much intelligence, on top of the very good qualities as a footballer that he has. But for me, it's the maturity that he showed in a game like that that made the difference for Real Madrid.
All right, Alex, final question to you. In fact, you can both answer this. Like, let's play hypothetical role-play game. If Mbappe had made a different decision back in the summer, would Real Madrid be, obviously in the long term, we assume they'd be better?
Such a bad question.
Why?
Well, so what? And then
it's unpleasant
what happened
for you, isn't it?
So what? Is Casemiro still there? Is he left as well? Well, is Tchouameni has come as well?
Well, Tchouameni would have come anyway, right?
I don't know. How do you know? How do we know?
Okay. Well, let's ask Alex. He's in Madrid. Alex, had they signed Mbappe, would they have been like, oh, there's no more money? Oh, let's not bring in Tchouameni.
Well, what was your question? Would things be better now than
I think in the long term they'd be better. In the short term, do we think that the impact, moving Vinicius or whatever, the reason I say this is because I'm still convinced that one day Mbappe will rock up there.
Yeah, so I agree with you.
What do you think? Nobody will hold you to it if you get it wrong.
Yeah, and it's a bad question, so don't worry about it.
But this was the weird thing about the whole Mbappe saga, wasn't it? It was that it went on for so long and he was the number one, the only player that Florentino Perez wanted to bring in. And yet you looked at that Real Madrid team at that point, and the one position they did not need to reinforce was the left-hand side of the attack, because Vinicius was the most exciting young player in that position anywhere. That was always just the strange thing about the whole thing, was that it was going to cause on-the-pitch problems in terms of what you do. Now, of course, they would have found a way around it. I'm sure they could have switched it around and found a way to make it work. But it wasn't a problem that needed to be solved. And I think that... It's worked out pretty well so far. It looks so good. Vinicius keeps getting better. He's carried on this year at least as good, maybe even better than he was last year. And that development and that progression would have been disrupted to some extent if he was switched over to the right hand side or whatever. No, on the Tchouameni point, I think the fact they were of course in talks for that deal before the Mbappe decision, but the fact that they came out and did it the following week, pretty much, I think it was very much a let's make a big noisy signing to make people forget a bit about Mbappe. For sure, there was that.
A Benzema Mbappe partnership is always the best anyway.
Well, that's what I think. I think when Florentino goes home and he's like drawing in the back of envelope, he's drawing a lineup. Had Mbappe signed, it would have been Mbappe with Benzema up front, Vinicius wide on one side, Valverde wide on the other. Maybe Casemiro stays with Tchouameni. Maybe it's some combination of those two. Yeah. And then you tell Furlan.
That would have been great.
That would have been something. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Classico. Let's talk about the game that was basically the Premier League's Clásico the last couple of years, maybe still is, Liverpool and Manchester City. Going into this game, everything said City. Liverpool had a ton of injuries, a ton of absences. There was a well-rested Erling Haaland, Pep Guardiola plugging him into the charger that he keeps at the Etihad. I know it's a joke I made before, but I still like the joke. And Liverpool emerges victors after a phenomenal game. I mean, leaving aside, even if Liverpool had lost that game somehow, 2-0 or whatever, the way these two teams played, I thought it was incredibly entertaining. Not many goals, obviously, just the one goal. I thought this is the kind of thing that you can really, really get a boost if you're Liverpool.
Completely, yeah. Although we thought before that maybe they already kick-started their season after the win against Newcastle in the last minute, after the win against Ajax. And they hadn't really, but this is different because it's City, because it's Liverpool's best performance of the season for me in terms of how you defend it as a team, how you defend it together, your intensity, the way you press, the way you set up, everything that you could have done, the way you defended on Haaland, De Bruyne, all of that. Maybe you're helped by Pep's strange setup and strange ideas again, and I think he overthought it again. But it doesn't matter. In Liverpool, you can only think about what you can do well, and certainly with the defense with Milner, Gomez, Van Dijk and Robbo to defend like that was really, really remarkable. It was, for me, they were outstanding from start to finish.
Klopp made some huge calls in this, the kind that kind of blow up in your face. Milner at right back, I thought. And with that Gomez in the middle after the kind of horrible games Gomez has had. Henderson, you know, you mean best game of the season, and Henderson's on the bench, right?
Yeah.
Trent, not fully
I kind of
fit.
Welcome that.
Yeah. I know you were going to see a link between the two. It worked out. Now, it worked out, again, I'm talking in terms of performance, right? You can come up and you can bring up the referee and whatever else. But I'm just talking in terms of performance, right? And they could have lost and it still would have mattered. On the refereeing point, I think two big talking points legit. One is the situation when Jurgen Klopp got sent off. He apologized at VAR afterwards. It is pretty unbecoming, whatever, heat of the moment. But
the goal?
I want to deal with sending off first.
Sorry, yeah.
How do you not see Bernardo Silva grabbing his shirt?
I don't understand. The linesman, and I get all
the linesman's like, right there.
I get that the theme was clearly let the game play. Let the game play. Don't blow anything. I think they gave 17 fouls. That should have been the 18th one, because this is flagrant, as we say in basketball. This is just like, it's not on.
And if you don't give that, the other one obviously was the one that wasn't given and then was given on VAR, and which really annoyed Pep Guardiola. And that was the one which led to the goal being, Phil Foden's goal being struck off.
Yeah.
It was Haaland on Fabinho.
Yeah.
How do you see that?
But you can't, again, I can understand what Guardiola is saying. If at the start of the game you said to the two managers, I'm not going to give fouls, just I'm going to let the flow of the game go. I'm not going to give anything, really. And you don't give the Bernardo on Salah either. You can't give the Haaland on Fabinho. You just don't give it.
I think the thing with this one was...
But it's a foul. It's a foul, 100%.
There is a grab of the shirt.
Yeah, right?
There's definitely a grab of the shirt from Haaland. So if I'm the VAR, I say, look, Anthony Taylor can say he wants a referee one way. I'm just going to point out to him, and because he might not have seen it, that it's not just Haaland jostling, but he grabs his shirt, and then it's over to you, Anthony, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to absolve the VAR in this situation. He did his job. He's pointing it out.
Yeah, no,
and then if Anthony Taylor wants
to,
I do have some sympathy with Pep. I mean, my view, it is a foul. I don't even think that there were that many situations. I know, obviously, he let it run. He didn't call ticky-tacky stuff, but I don't think there were that many situations where it was like, oh, that was definitely wrong. This one, I don't know. I can see why Pep is annoyed.
Yeah, I can see. Although they would have given the foul on Alisson by Haaland had they not given the shirt pull too. So
that's what they said. And again,
GMO would always say that, I guess.
Of course, but I also thought that would have been wrong.
Yeah,
too. Because I don't think that was a foul by Haaland on Alisson. Where does this leave City? Because you touched upon it. Was it an overthinking, and did it cost them?
I think it cost them. I have to say, I didn't really understand. I think the back three, they've played it before. I just quickly, you see James Milner as right back. I cannot believe that you don't put Cancelo and Foden on Elliot and Milner's side and put pressure and play almost everything on that left-hand side. If you're Pep Guardiola and you see the weakness in that Liverpool team, it's there. It's Elliot, who's very good, but young.
Right.
This is the first game of this caliber that he starts. And then James Milner, who is good, but who's old and doesn't play right back anymore. And you can put Foden and Cancelo on that side and even bring, if you want, a Gundogan a bit higher up to have that triangle on the left-hand side. They missed a big chance for me there by overthinking.
I almost felt it was like kind of like a double deception thing from him. That would have been the obvious thing to do, but we do have to give a shout-out to Harvey Elliott. I thought he played two positions in that
game. Best player in the game.
He was phenomenal. Yeah. I've often taken the line on the overthinking thing that what we call overthinking is you try to get an edge on your opponent. Yeah. And when we, I don't know what the XG was for this game. Obviously, we saw chances. There were many more chances than goals, some clear cut ones, up in the Jota header, Salah in the first half when Ederson made that save, when I think you tweeted that he should have squared it.
100%.
Hindsight 2020. But also, you know, you had Haaland's headers, you had that big save from Allison, you had the disallowed goal. I don't have such a big problem with the way he set up, other than perhaps targeting Milner more, which would have been pretty obvious. But I thought he got a good performance from his team, and he's away from home, and it's Anfield, and it's a wounded Liverpool, but a Liverpool who are on top of their game.
Yeah,
am I being too kind to Pep?
I think a little bit. I think Cancelo is always far more effective on the left-hand side than on the right-hand side anyway.
So what, you play a Kanji right back?
Yeah, I mean, but you already have a hybrid defense anyway. So it could have been a back three with Cancelo super high on the left, for example. So I would not have changed, for example, I would not have had really Cancelo and Foden as wing backs. And just the usual, the normal back three, if you want. But I just think Cancelo on the right-hand side is not the same as on the left-hand side at all. And I think we haven't seen Cancelo really creating as much from the right than he does on the left. Well, I think De Bruyne suffers from the Cancelo position as well onto the right, the right half spaces. And City haven't used the half spaces well yesterday.
No, they haven't. And what you also missed with Cancelo, not to go on about it, but I think we both agree on Cancelo that I think he's one of City's best players when he's on song and used in the right way.
Attacking wise.
What he brings when he comes inside and starts to play make, but then he found himself coming inside into an area which I thought was congested by Bernardo Silva's position as well. Now, again, not wrong to play the box, not wrong to bring Bernardo Silva there, but you know, decisions have consequences, right? There's always a counter effect. You got to choose the best one. I thought that affected him. I think very specifically, obviously, isolate the incident, the goal with Mo Salah. He apologized afterwards.
Yeah.
He tried to be aggressive defensively, and to use NFL parlance, he jumped the passing route, right? He tried to go in front of him and didn't get the ball. Maybe I'm thinking too Italian, too conservative, but you're up against Salah, the ball's coming, rather than gambling, just drop off him. You're quick enough, you're not quicker than Salah, you're quick enough to jockey him, wait, drive him wide, wait for help to come, make Salah beat you and dribble, and then beat him, you know, because there were other players who were recovering. That would have been the safe thing to do?
I mean, I go even more Italian than you. I was always told playing that you should not leave anybody 1v1 when you have a corner or a free kick like that. By the way, terrible free kick from De Bruyne. I know Cancelo is getting all the stick. There's no way Kevin De Bruyne, of his quality, takes that free kick straight into Alisson's hands, and then Alisson kicks the ball towards Salah. But I was always told, always leave 2v1, so two players of your team who don't have to be defenders, but against the one player from the other team that stays up in case there's a counter-attack.
Well, as we've often, 1v1. As most people know French football is the uglier, more defensive Cancelo version than Italian football. So.
Is Cancelo better use for you to be there with Salah or being on the edge of the box, for example, in case the ball comes back out and he can volley or recycle the ball or do something? Why is it him that stays with Salah? It makes no sense whatsoever.
No, that doesn't quite follow with me. I mean, I guess you'd have to look at the other options. Were they in the box to try to use their size or their presence? And then you make a trade-off. But I'm with you on that one.
Don't know.
What I would say a little bit too was also that script, right? Goalkeeper gets it, boom, Hail Mary over the top. Obviously, I always wonder, you know, people watch Champions League games not involving their team. We saw Andre Onana do it for Inter against Barcelona very effectively.
Diego Costa in a way for Porto against...
We saw Diego with a Galeano goal.
Yeah.
And didn't we see Ederson also do this? Was it last season or the year before to Raheem Sterling?
He did it to against PSG in the semi-final.
With Raheem Sterling, right?
Maybe Mahrez, or maybe it was Zinchenko and then Mahrez scored or something like that. But yeah, that's what...
So this is not something that's... No. It's quick thinking from Alisson, but it's not great. Something unfamiliar. Something the city themselves have done.
But clearly one of the themes for Liverpool was that Salah was the highest player all the time. And we saw on the chance that he misses that he should have square for Jota. If you look at the heat maps and the average position, he's the one higher up. And Firmino, Elliot and Jota are much behind him. And they did all the recovery work. I think between them three, they recovered 17 or 18 balls. Salah didn't have to do any defending. He was just had to stay up there. They play over the top. And they played behind the city line, and then he had to go for it, and he finally worked. But if you play more centrally like that, it was always going to be more effective, especially with the incredible game that Elliot had on that right-hand side. That suits Salah perfectly well.
I want to bring it back to Haaland because he's fully well-rested. I don't think he had a bad game in terms of getting into positions and shooting. I think he had, five shots on goal?
Six shots on goal.
Obviously one was that great save from Alisson, and the one that you kind of scuffed, but he did the headers, and I was always fascinated by this. Remember when we did like our list of greatest young players, we had Tor Christian Carlsen, who of course is Norwegian, like Erling Haaland. I think he angered Haaland by putting him in sixth place at the time.
Yeah.
But he said, he can improve his heading. I think Haaland has said he can improve his heading. I think this is evidence that he can improve his heading. Now, you can say he did well to be in those. He did great to be in those positions.
I agree.
And I'm not saying they're easy headers, but can you imagine if he becomes a great header of the ball as well?
Yeah, I know. And I think we looked. He got 39 touches, the six shot, his XG on his own, just him, not the City team, just him is 0.49, so it's 0.5. So he should have done better, really, than because there's. He doesn't even test Alisson on the headers, which is where I would rather him to try hit the top corner instead of hitting the ball at Alisson with power because he could not judge the ball properly or he didn't want to take the risk of trying something a bit more difficult maybe. But
honestly, this is something where if he masters this, it's just about game over, right?
Pretty much.
Talking about some of the ugliness in this, Liverpool have opened an investigation. People are throwing missiles or coins at Pep Guardiola. I got to say, Pep, when he was angry about the goal, I mean, look, both managers are passionate and we want to see that. We accept it. Klopp got himself sent off. Unnecessary and was always going to be sent off. I thought it was quite disrespectful to the referee, which is also why he apologized for that afterwards. Pep as well, after the disallowed goal, I'm fine with you getting angry, then the fans go and mock you because the call goes against you. Not his first rodeo.
Yeah.
Going and like throwing your hands in the air like that.
Winding up a bit, yeah.
Wind up the crowd. I think he could have avoided that. There's also some ugly songs about Hillsborough, which sadly we have to cite. And again, I don't want to digress on this, but I just have to say this, this could have been you. If you are a match-going fan, this could have been you. So just please think about that, right? And then there was a little bit of pre-game tension stoked by Jurgen Klopp when he talked about his ceiling versus Manchester City's ceiling.
Yeah,
in terms
three clubs who can do what they want. He said, and I have no ceilings.
Is he playing to the gallery on that one a little bit?
He said, you asked me the question, I'm going to give the answer, but you all know the answer. We all know the answer. We do. I guess he could have maybe be a bit more political in the way he answered, but then why when everybody knows this is true, PSG, Newcastle and City, more than anybody else. I'm not saying that there's no other club who can spend millions and billions as well. I'm just saying them three, because of the way they own, are a bit different than the others.
What I would say, there's no question they're not just a bit different, they're a lot different. What I would say, though, is that if you're going to go down this route and make this point, it is a complex argument.
Yeah.
And inevitably, you get the two shoutiest people in the corner. On one side, people saying, oh, no, it's just a normal investment fund, blah, 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 on the one hand. And on the other, say, they're all cheating, right? I think there are ways one very obvious way is liquidity, right? It's just simply having cash on hand. Not that you can outspend the other person, you can move quickly with cash and you don't have to liquidate other assets to do it. That to me is a pretty obvious one. The other obvious one is that when it comes to sovereign wealth funds, let's face it, these three countries that he's talking about, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the Emirates and Abu Dhabi, these aren't democracies with oversight. So while it is the people's money, you don't necessarily have that internal debate. Whereas when Fenway spend money, it's mostly John Henry's money and Warner's money. But equally, they have other shareholders and they may disagree on how they want to spend the money, right? It's just very complex. And I think people are guilty of kind of dumbing this down a little bit. And also what I would say about Newcastle is I would leave them out of the conversation for now.
For now, yeah.
Because the way they've spent, you know, Paris Saint-Germain and Manchester City have both been sanctioned for breaching financial fair play. Newcastle have not. No. It's not by UEFA, right? Not yet. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. So anyway, lumping them in there, in some ways it works, some ways it doesn't. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough of Anfield. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
More classics. Paris Saint-Germain beat Marseille 1-0 in France's version of the Clásico, which of course goes all the way back to PSG's founding date sometime in the 1970s. Yes, there were people walking on the moon before Paris Saint-Germain was even founded. Sorry, Jules. All right. Less than 50% possession at home against a side that played the last 20-odd minutes with 10 men. But I guess it doesn't matter when you go on the counterattack like that.
They wanted verticality. They got the verticality. That was one of the theme that the manager Galtier wanted. To be fair, what I liked about the game, it felt like old times. This was a proper classic where the two teams went for it. Marseille played well at times. They were a bit unlucky. They were exposed, but because they attacked and they pressed high, and I like the fact that Tudor and his team went for that. And PSG's front three were outstanding at times and they were very good, and it's another win. I think Marseille have only won one in the last 26 in the Classic, so but they're getting closer.
Are the haters wrong to be surprised that Mbappe passed the ball to Neymar for the goal?
It's his first assist, by the way, this season. Gab, Kylian Mbappe says after the game that he never asked to leave Paris Saint-Germain in January, and that the day the story came out, he was taking a nap and his entourage were watching his little brother play in the youth league. I'll share what I think after, but first, you tell me who you believe, Kylian or the whole French, and not just the whole French media, the whole people in the know media around the world.
Yeah, so I'm going to go and, again, lift the curtain a little bit. I know people like to say, oh, the media make things up. No, they don't make stuff like this up. What does happen is, presumably this was shared with a few people, and then others just reported what the original people reported that whoever leaked this came to. Equally, the fact that Paris Saint-Germain didn't deny it, I think also speaks volumes about this, right? Because when you check the story, you pick up the phone. Hey, Paris Saint-Germain, did Kylian say this? And they say, yes, we're sorry he said this. Or no, he didn't say, did you say, no comment. We're not commenting. I'm sorry. This is pretty obvious. I don't know why he's walking this back. I don't think it's...
No, I mean, he said what he had to say, really. Like in front of, you know, he was always going to like, there's no
point. Going to do what? Say one thing one day, say another thing.
No, but there's no point putting fire now on going publicly like, yeah, I want to leave now. I'm not happy. And then, like, you know, they've just won the class.
Let me help him. Let me be his personal PR advisor, right? If this is what he wants to say, he says, yeah, I said what I had to say, but right now I'm a Paris Saint-Germain player. Yeah, I'm 100% focused on Paris Saint-Germain, and then I'll be 100% focused on France and blah, blah, blah. It's all you got to say, right?
Yeah.
All you got to say. Tons of twists and turns, but Arsenal get a massive 3 points away to Leeds and are now 4 points clear at the top of the Premier League. Jules, this game was delayed because VAR wasn't working. I'll bet Arteta is happy they waited to fix it.
It's very, as you said, it was crucial. Crucial that VAR worked because the ref gave a penalty and a red card to Gabriel right at the end, 94th minute. That was not given by after VAR intervened, the referee went to the screen, saw it and realized that it was a wrong call.
By the way, Patrick Bamford, one of those cheating foreign players versed in the dark arts who goes and tries to get a opponent sent and off
and
whines and pulls. He's
nicely educated. But Arsenal didn't play well. We're not the best team. They scored a very important goal. And then they were solid. Ramsdale won that game for them, which is very important because, as we said, they played so many games. They were at Bodø/Glimt in Norway on Thursday night. They stayed overnight over there. They only came back Friday to go to Leeds. This is it. You know,
Leeds played really, really well. I also have a message, by the way, to all the Muppets on social and stuff like that who complained, oh, contempt for the fans. Why do we need VAR to play this game? And, like, first of all, this is a tournament. It's a tournament called the Premier League. They have rules.
Yeah.
One of the rules is that there's VAR there.
For everybody,
and then afterwards, especially if you're an Arsenal fan, you're pretty damn happy that they had VAR.
Tottenham pulled up alongside City in second place with a 2-0 win over Everton at home. But Gab Richarlison's injury could be a huge loss for him and for Brazil and for Spurs.
A massive loss. Obviously, this was his homecoming to Everton. On the pitch, though, I thought they actually played better once he went off and they had the 3-5-2 with Bissouma.
Bissouma won the game for me.
We're going to see much more of this. Yeah. I think also it's Kulusevski's out, Lucas Moura just back and whatever. It's an alternative. Let's not forget, Bissouma, I thought, in the summer, was probably their most important signing, as much as Richarlison anyway. And it's just Conte integrating him in the team. Doesn't hurt to have another way to play. Manchester United are held at home by Newcastle as Cristiano Ronaldo gets only his second league start of the season and has two goals disallowed before making way for Marcus Rashford, who misses the winner. Jules, I think Ten Hag was more impressed with United's performance than I was.
Yeah, and then I was too. I mean, Cristiano was not happy at all to be taken off. He kept shaking his head. And then at the end, I don't know, Ten Hag is on the touchline. Casemiro comes off and Casemiro is like, get it. And you know, almost like Ten Hag said, well, you know, not bad. What do you mean not bad? I don't know, Newcastle, they're a good team. They're good. They drew with City. That was at St. James's Park. But still, this is a game that United should win and should play better, I think, in it. But again, you come on the back of a game in the Europa League where he played a very strong team against Omonia. That I really didn't understand why. And then you play almost the same team against Newcastle on the Sunday.
There is zero doubt in my mind that Cristiano would have buried the header that Rashford missed. Equally, some of the Cristiano fans going on about, oh, but he had two goals just left. Like, he was about 10 yards offside. The other one, you know, it was sneaky playground stuff. I've seen Cristiano score enough phenomenal goals and even ordinary goals that I wouldn't have counted that.
That's for sure. Napoli is the top in Serie A with a 3-2 win over Bologna, Gab. Victor Osimhen comes off the bench to score the winner. I think I know what that means.
Of course. It means the best is yet to come. Oh my goodness. So he starts with Politano and Jack Raspadori, makes a change. Here comes Chucky Lozano. Here comes Victor Osimhen. It's 1-1 at halftime. We're in playing game. Only got the equalizer just before the break. And boom, they take it away. They take the lead. Got a bit nervy at the end because Meret made a mistake. But then Osimhen, of course, scoring the winner. I don't know. Above him,
incredible.
Only Sky.
Oh,
and I even mentioned Kvaratskhelia, who was man of the match, by the way. But we're used to that by now. Time to show some love to Union Berlin, producer Freddie's favorite team. They beat Borussia Dortmund 2-0 to say stop of the Bundesliga in their own unique and inimitable style.
Yeah, incredible.
You've got some numbers on this,
I know. I mean, we tweeted it during halftime when they were 2-0 up at halftime with 27% of the ball. 80 passes. 80 passes 11 shots. I mean, I was like, wow. And the XG was 1.5 or something. This is incredible.
You want to talk about efficiency? I think they had 16 shots at the end of the game with 23% possession.
Incredible.
Masterpiece.
Well done to them.
Dortmund had some chances late on. Yeah, this was a game where they could have used Anthony Modeste.
Yeah, and also Dortmund, Kobel in goal. I mean, you don't make mistakes like that. Chelsea beat Aston Villa 2-0 as Graham Potter mixes things up with Raheem Sterling playing as a right wing back in Reece James' absence, while Kepa gets the start and makes some big save. Gab, your thoughts?
My thoughts is that Raheem Sterling should refuse to play ever again after being nutmegged by Ashley Young. Yeah. I think that on its own, it's obviously not his role. Maybe he can adapt to it. Reece James being out is obviously a big loss. I'm glad he went with somebody more attacking than going like, oh, let's put Azpilicueta there. Let's put Dave out there. No. I'd rather you put Loftus-Cheek there, but obviously they had other guys out, so maybe they couldn't do that. He's experimenting. He's trying to find his lineup. I don't have an issue with that. He's given the concepts. I just don't think these pieces fit together very well. I mean, Villa gifted them 2 goals.
They would play better.
Bayern beat up Freiburg 5-0 to restore some sense of normality to the Bundesliga table. Jules, you like Leroy Sané playing through the middle?
Yeah, I like that a lot. I mean, they were outstanding. 5 different goal scorers for the 5 goals. They've scored 53 goals now in 16 games this season. 53. That's 3.3 goals per game. I mean, you could say Robert Hu. They were great. They're back to their best. And Freiburg, to be fair, were quite naive.
But if you play Sané through the middle, right, do you play Mane at center forward? Where do you put my man Thomas Müller? Musiala?
Musiala, maybe, yeah.
But who's playing center forward? Müller? Okay, fine. But then where do you put Musiala?
I think Mane showed that it's not a good position for him either. Right. So it'll be interesting to see what he does going forward. Juve desperately needed a win and they got it against Torino in the derby. But Gab, did they look better? And is there a Bonucci controversy brewing?
So Bonucci was dropped for this game. And you think club captain, Torino, he played Danilo at center back. There were rumors, later denied, that he asked to move on. Like, Bonucci's a club captain. A lot of players are unhappy. I think he just voiced it to Allegri. We'll see where this goes. In terms of did they play better, they certainly created better chances. Torino were terrible. But then Juve didn't even have a shot on goal for the first half an hour. In the end, deserving winners, but there's still a long way to go.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Atletico Madrid needs some full-on gutsy cholismo to get it done, but it's a massive win for them away to Athletic Bilbao. Jules, this was old school.
So old school. So Simeone 1.0, we say. and Griezmann at his best, really, in that kind of system and how deep they played. He scored the winner. He apologized afterwards as well to the fans and saying like, I hurt you by leaving the way I did, blah, blah, blah. All of that, they're third in the table. I don't know if that's a new dawn, but with the old school, maybe. I don't think you can play like that all the time because they could easily have drawn that game.
Easily. And Bilbao are a good side and they were flying and San Mamés was in fuego. And by the way, I loved how Reinildo channeled his inner Diego Godín. The little bit of Diego Godín that lives on in every Rocky Blanco.
In all of us. Nicolò Barella shines and Andre Onana starts as Inter beat Salernitana 2-0. Gab, how important is Barella? And has Inzaghi picked his full-time keeper there now?
Barella is the leader of this team now at this stage. I think we can anoint Barella and Bastoni as the leaders of this team. Still no Brozovic, obviously no Lukaku. Scored a great goal. Phenomenal again.
Yeah.
And yes, now it's time to say thank you, Handanovic, and hello, Onana. No more Handa, please. Jules, I think I speak for both of us when I say we're big Xabi Alonso fans. We're marks, in fact, to use wrestling parlance. However, maybe that's why it hurts us so much that after conceding 3 at home to Porto, his Bayer Leverkusen side gave up 5 to Eintracht. And most of the goals coming the same way was inability to defend the break.
Completely, I mean, being exposed. I mean, he started just before the break with like a penalty that then was missed and retaken by Kamada, who scored, and Kolo Muani. I missed the first one, so nothing went their way really into that game. I'm still not sure. I watch them and I'm like, okay, I'm not sure if they're going the right way or if they're not going the right way, if they're a bit lost, if he's asking them too much to do with the ball.
That defending, which leaves though.
Them exposed. I mean, Incapier, who is, I think, a really good young player, who scored their goal, but was a disaster defensively for pretty much every goal. I'm like, wow, well, okay.
Do you think maybe, I mean, my theory is that since we know Peter Boss is free now, that maybe Peter Boss put on like a wig, obviously, because he's bald as hell, and is impersonating Xabi Alonso. And,
nice. No? Yeah. Gav, how about some love for Atalanta? They beat Sassuolo 2-1 and remain just 2 points off the top of Serie A. And they have some big players like Toloi, Zapata, and Jim City, who have yet to return from injury.
Jim City, which many people thought was just a health club, in fact, is a very good defender. I think it's phenomenal. And they're doing it. I've said this before. They're playing very differently from last year. They're still direct. They're certainly more defensive. Ademola Lookman's given them a real spark when he's in there. And again, so many of their guys are out. They're integrating more of their young players, you know, their homegrown players. Obviously, a tremendous youth academy, not just Scalvini, who's got everybody excited, but others as well. So, they're onto something good, and they're not going to go away. And they have no midweek football, which I think really, really matters them. Great job by Gasperini. Mason Greenwood, who was arrested in January on suspicion of rape and assault, was rearrested this weekend for allegedly breaching bail conditions. Jules, the story is very ugly.
Yeah, really ugly, Gab. And on Monday morning, he was charged and appeared in court as well for the attempt of rape. This is ugly, as you said, crazy. Like now, you would expect that thing, the process to go along and he will have a trial and all of that. It's just, you just wonder how you got to that point. Lazio are held at home by Udinese and they also lose Ciro Immobile to injury, Gab. They're also making news off the pitch with Matteo Sarri and Iglitare.
Yeah, you know how like sometimes intelligent people, and I think both Sarri and Tare are intelligent people, they don't have filters and they don't have people around them to say, hey, don't say stupid, unhelpful things. So Maurizio Sarri comes out afterwards, complains about the pitch and says, that's it. I'm never managing the Stadio Olimpico ever again because the pitch is bad.
It's really bad.
That's fine, but don't come out and say it this way. Yeah. And just, there's a different way. Don't be, you know, Mr. Diva drama queen. No, I can't work in these conditions. You know, come on, man. You're better than that. The other one, Iglitare. All right. Other than displaying a complete absence of any kind of sense of finances when he's complaining that, you know, other clubs in Serie A like Milan and Juve and Inter are functionally bankrupt because they have large debts. That's not quite how it works. He also came out and he trolled who else, but who's the man with the Europa Conference League tattoo? Jose Mourinho saying like, oh, Europa Conference League, that's for losers. I'm like, okay, Tare, you big winner.
Why have you won?
Yeah, I'd love to see Tare go and say that to Mourinho's face. I'll give him, Tare's about three times the size.
They just drew at home to Sturm Graz in midweek in Europe. I mean, come on.
Our buddy Peter Boss, second Peter Boss reference of the show, is no longer in charge of Lyon. But even though he was replaced by his polar opposite, Laurent Blanc, not much has changed.
No, they lost Rennes 3-2. Three goals scored by former Lyon players as well, Guiri and Terrier. And Blanc said, I loved everything about today. Well, apart from the result. Well, yeah, thank you. Apart from the result. I mean, they try to play. They still can't defend. There's loads of work to do. I'm still not sure he can deliver, but we'll have to see. Saudi Arabia's public investment firm, Gab, who own Newcastle United, are rumored to be considering a stake in the broadcaster beIN Sports. Why is this relevant to our football show?
Well, it's relevant because beIN Sport, as you know, are a major, major broadcaster. They pump a ton of money into the game. I haven't looked at their accounts. I was assuming they make a ton of losses every year, given the amount of money they throw around. It's relevant because the chairman of beIN Sport is Nasser Al-Khelaifi, who wears different hats, including he's also the president of the club whose shirt you're wearing, Paris Saint-Germain, of course, president of the European Clubs Association. Yeah. I'm wondering if they acquire beIN Sport. Do they also acquire Nasser Al-Khelaifi as well?
Maybe.
Then go work for them?
Yeah.
Smart money is that there are other funds and the Qataris would rather not sell to public investment fund for obvious reasons. But it is a reminder of beIN Sport came onto the scene, changed so many things, expanded so quickly, and now things may be going in a different direction. It's also funny that, of course, Saudi Arabia had banned BeIN Sports just a couple years ago in the country. Stealing their satellite signal. Edinson Cavani scores his first goals of 2022 as Valencia are held at home by Elche 2-2. Jules, you only lasted 45 minutes, but yeah, you must be delighted nonetheless.
He delighted, absolutely. Again, I'm going to do the celebration. I mean, we love him in our house, to be fair.
By the way, that celebration, he stole that from Andy van der Meijden.
No, I know.
Let's be clear on that.
I'm
okay?
just saying
there
that.
There is only one archer, and it's Andy van der Meijden.
Yeah, but that's how he celebrates his goal now, whether it's his or not. I know.
But give credit to the original, Andy van der Meijden.
True. And yeah, fitness-wise, I think there will be issues and there will be problems. And I don't think he can play every 3 days, et cetera, et cetera. But to see him at that level and the assist that he gave in the previous game.
Nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
He looks like clean-shaven Jesus, doesn't he?
I know, he's so lovely. The Athletic reports that the Premier League is mulling a 16 pre-season tournament in, where else? The United States next summer. What do you think?
So this would be, I think, the format they were talking about. You know, you have a round robin of you know, 2-3-team groups and then maybe a final. It's a money spinner and so on. I think there's a lot of hoops to jump through because a lot of clubs might say, well, you know what? Screw this. I'm going on tour in Asia where I'm making more money.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to organize my own independent tour of the US. You know, what kind of prestige are you going to give me to, you know, because the Premier League had this thing called the Asia Cup in the past, which was like this smaller,
yeah,
shorter tournament.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, they need to get permission from the US Soccer Federation, from UEFA, from CONCACAF. I think there's still a lot of hoops to jump through here. Sevilla win 1-0 away to Mallorca, Jules. It's the first win for Jorge Sampaoli and only Sevilla's second win in all competitions this season. But we already see a spark there, don't we?
Well, we see them better structured, that's for sure. Better organized, I think. More balanced, I would say. I'm not sure if it's a spark because I don't think they've got really the players to play more expensive football and nicer football. But certainly they're there. They're harder to break down. They're harder to beat. They're harder to score against, and they win finally. And I think that's what he needed because there's been draws in the Champions League, in La Liga last week as well. But now with that, I guess the momentum is gathering. So
Munch is going to be very busy in January.
Yeah, he should be. Wolverhampton Wanderers have opened talks with Nuno Espirito Santo. Remember him? 17 months after they sacked him. How do you see the negotiations going? I mean, please tell me it's not true. Like, they can't go with him again.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm more interested in the fact that, you know, media report this with a straight face. Oh, they're negotiating, like, what they're negotiating with, you know, the Billy Idol song, like, Dancing With Myself comes up. Why we go through this?
Just Uncle George and Uncle George, really.
It's Uncle George with Uncle George, right? And if Nuno wants the job, he tells Uncle George, hey, Uncle George, I want this, and Uncle George decides. It's not,
yeah.
I mean, I did this whole thing as a charade. I don't like it. I think it should have been dealt with a long time ago. Whatever. I'm not sure he's going to help them either stay up.
No.
Another week, another case of games being delayed because somebody decides the goals are the wrong size. I find this story unbelievable.
Me too.
I don't know why it's happening now in 2022. I've never heard of this until recently.
Last three games.
We had Wigan last week, Hull City against Birmingham City, the Super League with Arsenal. Why is it so hard to get something so basic?
No, but
so
my question is, surely the goal have always been too big then? It's not just for this game that they went and pick a goal.
Well, no.
It must always been this one in that stadium at Hull City.
It's not like they're made of the wooden goalposts, so they grow because somebody waters
so
the pitch.
So it's always been wrong then. Or it's maybe the way they fit it. It's not the way they fit it because they had to cut it at the bottom. So that goal always was too high.
So no
one realized before. And who realized this time, by the way? Was it a linesman who went in and said, like, hang on, this is 2 inches too high? Well,
every time when you see before the game, right, you always see the referee and the linesman walking around. They touch the crossbar.
Yeah.
They're supposed to check the nets. What the hell are you checking?
I know, man.
Seriously.
It's incredible. After 8 years in charge, Marcelo Gallardo has announced that he will leave River Plate when his contract expires at the end of the season. So at the end of the year, the calendar year. Yeah, Pep Guardiola is a big fan, and I feel like he's been linked with top European jobs for the last few years.
Yes, by the way, he would probably say he's Gallardo, Marcelo Gallardo.
Won everything with River.
Won everything with River, greatest ever coach, been there since 2014. I feel like every year he's been linked.
Yeah.
I remember, in fact, after he's been in the job 6 months, somebody at the club in the championship reached out to me and says, oh, we really like Gallardo. Like, who's his agent? How can we contact him? Blah, 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 right? I mean, we know he's good. We know he looks good.
Yeah.
He's always kind of footsied it around. Obviously, he's got a past at Paris Saint-Germain and at Monaco. He's 46 now. You know, if it's because you want to move. But he's also been linked with moves to Mexico. Yeah. He's been linked with moves to MLS. He's been linked with national team jobs. I like the fact that there's somebody so hyped that is kind of taking his own time, doing his own thing, not jumping on the big European bandwagon just because. Good for him. Before we move on to the next quick hit, I do want to issue a small correction, which was flagged up by a listener last week on the show. I said that the IRA was the military wing. Sorry, I said the IRA is the military wing of Sinn Féin. I meant to say was the military wing, reportedly, obviously, of Sinn Féin. Apologies for the confusion. Jules, you know I couldn't care less about this, but Karim Benzema will win the Ballon d'Or in a few hours. Yes. Don't do it because you're only allowed one per show.
I did one, Karim the Dream, that's enough. He deserves it. Incredible year, calendar year now, of course. What a player. And I know you don't care. A lot of people don't care, which is fine. It's fine. I mean, I do care, but it's fine. But this was his dream, being a kid. And I love that. Whatever your dream is when you're a kid, whether it's winning the Ballon d'Or, working with Gab Marcotti, having your own show, I don't care. But when you finally realize it, you both got to realize your dreams.
There you go.
Yeah, well done.
Funny that that's his dream and not winning the World Cup. But it might be
another dream. Chelsea play Manchester United on Saturday, and United players have returned some of their ticket allocation to the club. Why, Gab?
I think we can give some praise to Manchester United's players. So basically, when they go away from home, each player, I think it's such as the players, the traveling squad get, they get two tickets to give to family and friends. I think they can buy more in some situations. In this case, since United have had their away ticket allocation cut because it's considered a high-risk match because it's late on Saturday. I don't know. Don't ask me about the place. I don't get it. They said, hey, guys, we'd rather have more fans there. Not that our family members aren't fans, but, you know, maybe proper match-going fans might make more noise and give us more support. And so many of them have given their tickets back, which I think is a good gesture for the fans.
For sure.
Jules, that brings us to an end. Well, we got to come back on Thursday, do this all over again, right?
Midweek round of Premier League.
Big midweek coming up. Not City and Arsenal, funny enough, but plenty other stuff to get stuck into. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.